It's time for Intersections, where art and science meet, your weekly hour of conversation, where you learn about curious ideas, creative works, and interesting phenomena with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Now, it's time for Intersections, where art and science meet.
I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations. In today's conversation, we're going to be talking about a new film called Solace. And the objective of Solace is to help us maintain the momentum of interest and support in natural areas. The idea of having a place that you can be calmed, that you can walk around in, that you feel safe. Those are the kind of ideas that come across in the film. And we'll be talking with our guests about how that global pandemic actually produced a lot of artistic works, including films during that time.
And I'm Dr. Krista Longton, an Associate Professor of Communication Studies at IUPUI and an Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. I'm really happy to be joined today by our two guests, Leslie Lawrence, Director and Editor of Solace, and Braden Worrell, Producer and Director of Photography. So happy to have you both here with us today.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah.
So my first question all about this is, you know, we hear a lot of how important it is to be out in nature. In fact, there is even now, I think, in the among the known issues that get published in the like psychiatry journals or psychiatric journals, a disease that's actually called nature deficit disorder, which is interesting that people can actually be suffering from a lack of being outdoors and in nature. And so what I wanted to ask is, Leslie, is that's kind of the heart of what this film is, isn't it? To try to encourage people to get out there.
Yeah, well, definitely to get out there, but mainly to kind of recognize that, you know, during the pandemic that we were getting outside more, we wanted to be out there more. It was one of the only places we could actually go to be safe. And there were so many more people that were getting out there that it was also impacting our nature places. And so we wanted to look at, well, are people using it more, which we found out later, definitely they are. And then are they thinking about preserving it since they're getting out there more to do it that way? So it's kind of got this variety of things in it that we're trying to get people to understand, to be out in nature, to take care of nature, and to see it as a place for solace.
Braden, can you talk a little bit about where the idea for the film came from?
Yeah, so Leslie and I actually got to meet each other right at near the beginning of the pandemic. A mutual friend of ours, another local Indianapolis video producer, had come across Leslie at a coffee shop, and then my name had come up, and they said, "Hey, you guys have got to meet together." And so Leslie was actually my first like in-person coffee meeting for like months, because we were all isolated. I think this was around May, Leslie, when you and I first met up.
And
we were both like visibly nervous, like, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to see another person face to face after weeks of being inside." But we met socially distanced. We kept our space. We met up, just really immediately hit it off. About not just filmmaking, but both Leslie and I's love of being outside, being going for a hike, bird watching, and photography. So I remember after our first meeting, Leslie came to me with the idea. She said, "Hey, I've noticed this trend of more people going outside recently during the pandemic. Since you can't go to concerts, you can't go to most restaurants, churches are kind of hit and miss. We can't go to our usual spots, so let's go to the local parks instead. And would people be willing to take a step further from there and say, hey, you know, maybe I wasn't a frequenter of my local park, but I actually really like it here. I'm really glad that this was kind of here waiting for us." as this unexpected global pandemic shut down most things. So people are like, hey, we can turn to this place, and this is really good. It's good for my mental and physical well-being. So Leslie and I were saying, like, hey, we love being involved with the outdoors. We love supporting the local parks and actively do so through donations and volunteering and things like that. But could we branch into this? Could we tap into this new market that's kind of going beyond just preaching to the choir of our usual nature enthusiasts? Hey, there's more people, can we pull more of those supporters in to support these beautiful natural spaces? And so Leslie described that idea, and I said, hey, absolutely, mm-hmm. I'd love to be involved with this.
Yeah, and our other production partner, Elaine Clemenstrud, who couldn't be here with mm-hmm. us today, she and I would take walks out in the park and constantly talk about, you know, what's in the news, what's happening, what are they saying about climate change and our environment and all of that, and wondering what in the world could we do. And Elaine she doesn't have a background in video production, but she has a lot of talent in details and surveys and evaluations and that kind of thing. And so she helped us kind of put together the survey that we put out first to get some responses to hear if people, how people were dealing with the pandemic and being outdoors. And so she was instrumental in helping us get that first piece of it together so that we could look at the data, you know, and kind of see how people are using the outdoors.
That's exciting. And when I think about you, actually, it's more than just you producing film, but you were actually doing the research on that to see how are people being outside. How did that, Leslie, how did that play then into the production of the film, the information and data that you got?
Yeah, so I think we got around 55 responses back. Braden and I had put it out on our social media and got enough responses back that we felt we got some good people who wanted to be a part of it. And we asked at the end of the survey if people would be willing to be contacted again and possibly be a part of the video. And so the three people that we had do surveys, they're in the video. And so we took people directly from the surveys and put them in the video and asked them, you know, what is your experience? How have you been coping with this? What have you been doing differently? How much more time have you been spending out in nature? And so we wanted it to be real life stories, not just, you know, experts out there who are telling us what's going on, but just the general public and how are they feeling about this and what's going on. So we went with that kind of data and put those people directly in. And then our main character, she of course had personal experience as well, as we all did going through the pandemic. And so we asked her and entered her into the video as well as a guest sort of speaker in there.
Could you talk a little bit more, Braden, as you know, kind of thinking about your work with the photography on a film like this, how the visual image kind of helped to add to some of these stories and this data that you have that would help a viewer sort of shape their perspective about this experience?
Yeah, I think from my experience in marketing, it's really easy to make a message more powerful if you just run the Indianapolis area. I was familiar with kind of the north side, and then they brought on the east and west and south side locations. And that was really important to finding a location to film this in that was a character in and of itself in the storyline. And so getting those good aesthetics was super easy when you go to a park. So we did, I think, three or four parks collectively that we've gathered footage from and we shot interviews at. And so just, we wanted to really, you know, people, once you get out into nature and experience it, they can easily see a beautiful sunset or a mossy forest in the early morning fog. And so just being present and working out the timing, and it sometimes required some early mornings to get up out there and get the nice sunrise shots. But that, the character of these natural areas was really important to show it in a good light, which was very easy to do. So a lot of times you just had to kind of show up and pull up the cameras and kind of find the right angles. But the aesthetic importance of it, we really wanted to make sure that when people watched this film, they saw that this was something to get invested in. So we kind of took that a more of a cinematic approach, which is especially how we structured the video. We took this hybrid format of starting out with a more narrative storyline, and then about halfway through, we switched to interviews. But we kind of set the groundwork by opening up the scene with a pretty striking visual of a mom at home during the peak of the pandemic. And she's just taking a moment. She's in her bathrobe. It's the start of the day. And she's having this moment to kind of collect herself and embrace for another day of what is the unknown. So we decided to shoot that in a more dramatic, darkly lit place to represent her dark place that she is in and that most of us were in throughout the rest of this pandemic. And just the first whole part of the short film that we created is pretty moody, it's pretty somber, it's pretty serious. And we kind of leapfrog throughout the different situations that I think most people could relate to with all the kids being at home, they're not in school. And now the parent has to kind of take over this sort of teaching role in addition to working from home, in addition to, hey, maybe I can't go to work or my job kind of suspended me for a little bit. Now the bills are kind of stacking up here. So we wanted to capture various scenes that a lot of different people could relate to because we wanted a lot of the story to be a conversation starter for folks and for people to say, hey, yes, that was totally me. I was totally in that situation. And then the part where, you know, kind of the tension's building up for this particular mom throughout her day, she just kind of has this moment where she puts her shoes on, she grabs her car keys and she walks out the front door. And there's not been any real audio or dialogue up to this point. And so our hope is with that, most viewers, they're kind of gripping onto, well, what happens next? What is she going to do in this kind of moment of desperation? So our talent did a great job acting out those scenes. And I don't think she had to really put on her acting hat too much because, I mean, this is already probably about 9 months of the pandemic. So it was very much real for her. But capturing that right aesthetic and then kind of going, I don't want to spoil too much of the video. I want people to go out and watch it. But to see the turn and what she decides to do in that moment of desperation and kind of turn to her local natural area, I think is really special in how the pace changes and the lighting changes very much and becomes much, much brighter as she finds her moment of solace.
So there's this element, obviously, that you see in other kinds of things that have to do with being in the environment and aesthetics, but you've gone beyond that and you've created, both of you, in the thought about this, you've created this thing that it's also supposed to be helpful to people. And it isn't just to go, oh, wow, that was nice, but there's much more to that. Leslie, can you talk more about what's the much more to it? What are you hoping that will happen as a result?
Yeah, so we wanted to start a conversation. That's why we put it together, was just sort of not just to create a film that everybody sees and then is just kind of done with, but to spark some thoughts and some curiosity and conversation around, you know, how do we treat nature? And now that we're spending more time out there, or even now that we're all going back to normal, if we want to call it that, you know, does that mean that you're not going outside anymore? Or, you know, just to talk about what does nature mean to us and how do we look at preserving that? Because we all know how important it was during the pandemic. It was so vitally important for us to have space to be able to connect and to be able to decompress and, you know, get away from the Zoom all the time and that kind of thing. And so being so important for those things, we need to preserve it. And how are we all going to do that? What are the ways that you can get involved and do that? And so we wanted to continue the conversation. They talk a little bit, our interviewees talk a little bit about that. They also had that kind of concern when they were talking about it. But we believe that there's way much more to the conversation than that. And we wanted to get a lot more people involved.
One of the things that I'm aware of when we think about a place like Indianapolis, where we all are right now, is I read something recently that said that we have fewer square feet of park space per capita in Indianapolis than in many other similar kind of areas across the country. And I'm wondering, Braden, when you kind of approached this project, how much you were thinking about not just that space of the pandemic, but kind of beyond that conversation about kind of how do we get involved and connected and what is our responsibility, particularly given that the resource of park space is scarcer, if you will, here in Indianapolis than it is in many other places around the country.
Yeah, and it's you really start to notice that even when Leslie and I were looking for locations to shoot, we were finding it's like, oh, we've got a few options, but not a ton of options. And so, and then that small amount of park space per capita research came up while we were planning and writing out the structure there too. So that reinforced really our message of, it's really hard to create new spaces, new natural areas. So we really need to protect the ones that we already have. And you know, the old adage kept coming up a couple times with Leslie and Elaine and I in our conversation of, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. So that kind of created a little bit additional urgency for us to really get this message out there and to equip people, viewers who watch this, with not just a sense of like, yes, we love our natural areas, but as Leslie was just mentioning, that results focused. How do we give people a jumping off point where they can go and be partnered up with an organization to go and volunteer and do invasive species removal or just clean up litter along their riverways? We really want to use this as a way to direct people and make it as simple as possible for people to follow up in a very tangible way, even if it's just, here's $5 a monthly donation or something like that, or I can give my time or skills to an organization. So we wanted to create this video first after we created the survey and everything. And we kind of got our marching orders on in terms of, we want to go this direction. We want to tell this story. We wanted to use this video as a kind of a central gathering space for people to meet somewhere, probably online because of the pandemic, but to use that as a place to have additional conversations, connect with others, and find ways to get involved in very specific ways, because it is slightly different than just the Indianapolis area. We can focus on Indianapolis, but we deliberately didn't shoot any signage so that we were hoping that the scenery could be kind of anywhere throughout the Midwest United States region. So that if we wanted to put together a package and send this video and a set of questions to another group in a different state even, hey, you guys can use this as a little gathering tool and try to get more people involved in whatever geography that you're in. So that was kind of the first idea for this video. And then we wanted to start to take that and branch beyond into a bigger picture, but that was kind of our first main goal was to, especially when you're talking about bringing in new people who might not be as connected. You know, they don't, these are the people that we wanted to attract where did not have the annual park membership pass. Those people already kind of get all the newsletters. They get all the event notifications. So for the newcomers, we want to give them a nice warm welcome, but then also like, hey, here's very easy, small steps that you can do to dip your toe in the water and to get more involved.
You know, Braden, I think, you know, when you started that, talking about the difficulty in finding a spot or enough spots, not one spot, but you know, to do filming and to make it much broader, you had to find, you know, the right spots and to do that. You know, that hints at the problem. Once something's gone, it's gone. And, right. You know, once we turn it over to development or once we do that. And so that's at the heart of the message that you had. That was one of your challenges, was to find those spaces. And that's even a stronger reason why we need to preserve these things. Leslie, were you surprised yourself at how, I would say there's parks, but how little just open natural spaces there were around this area?
Yeah, I was a little surprised, but I'm actually a part-time naturalist at Eagle Creek. And so, you know, just I'm out in nature a lot. And luckily I work in one of the largest parks here in the state. And if most people probably don't know, it's actually one of the largest municipal parks in the whole country that we have here. But even in regard to that, it's not a lot of space for the amount of people or, you know, throughout the state. And so you're right, with the development of the land, even recently having our wetlands legislation overturned, those kinds of things have a huge impact on our natural spaces and whether we're able to keep them, grow them, or we lose them. And that's kind of what we were really trying to get people to hopefully understand, was that being outside more, you know, it's great that more people are getting outside and realizing that how important it is and what it can do for their mental and physical health, but it's also so important to be able to preserve it, because losing it means that we don't have those spaces, but we have so few of them now that we really need to put forth the effort in order to protect them as best we can. And that's kind of what we were getting to too, is after the conversation, you know, what can you do? What can each person actually do to get involved and make changes? And your voice does count. I know that a lot of people think it doesn't, but actually just speaking up and talking about what do you want to see in your parks? Where do you want development to happen? Do you want wetlands to stick around and have more trails to be able to hike in, and those kinds of things? And then how do we fund that kind of stuff? So all of those things are conversations we're hoping to continue on with this piece.
So you talked, oh, I'm sorry, Mark.
No, go right ahead.
You talked a little bit about kind of the one of the unique things that I hear in this piece is this kind of action moment that comes, you know, this call to action that you have in a film like this. And so I'm wondering if you can talk about kind of where you hope folks will go. You know, Braden, you mentioned sort of donating time or money. Are there other sort of enticements to action that you would like folks to take advantage of after seeing a film like this? And either one of you can answer that question.
Yeah, I would like to see people get more more politically involved. I would like to see people speak up and say that they want these places, they want legislation for it, they want protections for our land, they want funding for this kind of stuff. And it really does take people to speak up to say that they want it. So that's where I would like to see it go, because I think we need to take it on a bigger scale than just saying that you want these or donating a little bit of money. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't, because if that's what you can do, please do it. But your voice has a lot of impact as well. And the more voices we have, the bigger collective we have, I think we can make a bigger impact here in our state and nationwide. So that's kind of where I would like it to go. How about you, Braden?
Yeah, definitely get involved with voting and writing your local legislators. I know over the last 4 years or so, my letters and emails to my local representatives has increased dramatically. But it's kind of hard, you know, if you're only voting midterms, you know, every 2 to 4 years, you got to really make those count. So in the meantime, vote with your dollars and really go to your parks, get that membership pass, because there is a lot in it for you. I think that's something that we learned from our surveys, from how people were responding, of they were kind of pleasantly surprised with how great that they felt going out into nature, even though that was something that they didn't routinely do before. So, you know, a park pass is really pretty affordable for a lot of folks, or even just a day pass is really helpful as well. So use that, you know, book your wedding venues there, because the more that you put money into these parks, the better they're going to maintain them, the more venues that they're going to be able to open up there as well. So if you're able to financially get involved, there's a lot that just directly comes back to you when you support these park places. And I can speak to the educators. Leslie's one of these educators. She puts on a great class about how to build a fire. It's a lot of fun, and you'll learn something that you didn't know, and it might even save your life one day. So there's a lot in it. So if you're able to vote with your dollars, get an annual park pass to your favorite little place, A lot of places have kayaking, fishing, bird watching, hiking. It's a great way to stay active. So if you're, you know, if you're still a little hesitant about going to your gym to get on the treadmill, there's a lot of great hiking trails around here. So support that, you know, throw $5 a month at that. And that's a great way to make sure that these places stick around.
Yeah, there's other ways that you can support too. A lot of people don't realize that conservation actually started with hunting and anglers. And they really put a lot of money into conserving the land so that they would have the resources there to be able to continue their hunting and fishing. And so what's interesting is that if us as individuals, whether we hunt or not, if we buy a hunting and fishing license, that money supports conservation. If we buy a license plate, an environmental license plate, part of that money goes back towards conservation. If there is a place on your tax form, now a long time ago, which might be saying I'm a lot older, but a long time ago, they used to have a box that you could tick and it would say, if you want to give a dollar towards conservation, just, you know, check this box and they'll automatically give that. Now if they've moved it around on the form, it's a little harder to find now, but it's still there. So things like that, where you can just easily do some things that you would normally do, like renew your plate or your taxes every year, or, you know, you can go and buy a hunting and fishing license. I have one and I bought a combo just because I had actually found out that that was a way to support conservation and I didn't know it. So there are ways that you can support your parks and the conservation of these parks and be able to help preserve them.
This is really an amazing conversation with tips on how we can actually do some things, which I love, besides watching the film. We've been talking with Leslie Lawrence and Braden Worrell about the new film that they've been producing, Solace, and we'll be right back after a short break.
No alarm clock. No traffic to negotiate. No staff meetings to attend. Sunday is your day, so do yourself a favor, tune out all that noise and tune in for Sunday Baroque.
Sunday morning from 5 to 9 here on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm Crystal Longton, and today we're having a conversation with Leslie Lawrence and Braden Worrell about a new film, Solace, that looks at the role of nature in our lives, our experiences, especially during a pandemic like this one. And Leslie, one of the things that we were talking about during the break was that a film like this gets folks thinking, right, about kind of next steps, next project, next idea. And I understand that this has the potential to kind of continue. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So while we were making the film, of course, many other ideas came to mind. And Braden and I would sit and have a beer somewhere and just kind of banter back and forth about, you know, our feelings on what's happening in nature and what's happening with climate change and those kinds of things. And ideas for other types of videos would come about, and a lot of them revolved around just small steps that people could do. And so we're interested in also putting together a series of small steps of moving beyond Solace, but Solace being that first one to start the conversation, but then putting together some other short films that kind of help people see what's possible and what they can do to help, you know, just as we were talking about earlier, some of the ways that people can help. So we wanted to be able to take it further. We would love to be able to make more of these films. And we had a great time doing the first one, although we did have some challenges doing it during a pandemic, but we had a great time doing it, but we also feel it's important to get these kinds of messages out.
You know, when you build the idea of you have one and then you're building a series, and you think about that, you have to do a lot of planning. And this goes back to your third partner. You have to be thinking about not only how do you stage out the one that you're in, but how do you make transitions from the one you're in and plan the ones out in the future. When you think through that challenge, how does a filmmaker go about that, Braden?
If funding is critical, getting support and other buy-in from other key stakeholders who can help not just help you afford to produce each episode, but how to make sure that it gets seen, get the right traction, create a marketing campaign around that. So fortunately, Leslie and Elaine and I all had some experience in grant writing before. And so we had kind of dipped into our personal networks and to reach out to a few folks to say, hey, would you guys be interested in picking this up as a 8 or 10 part series? So putting some feelers out for that and applying to several other grants as well. And that whole process of doing a grant submission really helped us organize our thoughts and really think long-term. And Mark, as you were saying, really, really get organized and really sharpen the direction for this whole series. During a pandemic, we really had a massive challenge of, you know what, a lot of people right now are struggling with paying bills, and you know, a lot of people have lost their jobs, and a lot of people don't know when they're able to send their kids back to school. Am I going to be able to do that vacation? You know, I'm like, it's really hard for people to make plans right now. People felt like they were constantly in a state of limbo. So at that moment, climate change is still a very real problem for all of us, but getting people to care about their natural areas and their that trajectory going towards climate change is a big ultimate goal of just educating more people on that and how ways to get involved. How do you get people to care about that when they're worried about, you know, where their next paycheck is coming from during a pandemic? That was a constant challenge. So Leslie and Elaine and I started thinking more through this series about how do we make an approachable series that's fun for people to engage in, that has a little bit of an entertainment factor to there. Leslie, at one time maybe this was our second beer that we were talking about, like maybe a zombie apocalypse vibe we could bring into this, just make it a little bit more engaging, a little bit more fun, introduce some humor into it so that people aren't just rapidly just smacked in the face with more bad news during the pandemic. So, all throughout 2020 and into 2021, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, was just putting out report after report over, hey, we're missing these key milestones. Pledges aren't enough, big corporations. We really need you guys to scale back on emissions. We really need you to switch to different technology that's more sustainable. As that came out, it was very overwhelming. It was very daunting for our whole team to say, hey, you know, how do we compete against this? So we knew that we needed to reach out beyond just our own personal network and attract some bigger money, some bigger funders to help us out with this project. Because just Leslie, Elaine, and I produced this first episode of Solace, but we really wanted to use it as a first episode, as a pilot, to really hand over to someone and say, hey, we are capable of doing this. Or if you're interested in this, we've got 8 more episodes kind of lined up. And a lot of our research, it's, hey, we have these natural areas, these green spaces, as they're called, but also blue spaces as well. And The Guardian had put out a really cool article a couple of years ago called Blue Spaces, Why Time Spent Near Water is the Secret of Happiness. And the author had been interviewing several researchers about the mental, physical well-being, being near water. So this is in the UK, so it's like, you know, Bristol Beach and all that, but even just being near a creek, or in some cases the research found being close to a water fountain even, was really helpful in reducing negative moods, reducing stress, and improving sleep, which I don't know about you guys, but I was definitely losing a few nights of sleep throughout the pandemic. So that could be a future episode of Blue Spaces in particular. What is the impact on that? So diving into a little bit more of the quantitative side of, this is how blue spaces really improve your mood overall. This is how they boost your wellness, because you're typically in a area that has less air pollution, it has more sunshine, that's really good for you. So presenting this whole episode as kind of a, I always remember a marketing class that I took where the direction, when anytime you wanted to approach a project, consider the radio station WIIFM, where all your listeners are thinking, what's in it for me, WIIFM. So we really wanted to kind of tee this up very easily for someone to say, hey, that looks like fun. I'm learning something new, and I'm also supporting something really great at the same time. And throughout this series, they could learn something new about, hey, next time when, since we're all kind of partly homeschooling during this pandemic, as we're driving over a bridge, we can say, hey, that water is what comes out of our tap when we get back home. That's how we cook our dinner tonight. And really just making those connections for people that I think a lot of people are just not aware of, you know, that reservoir on the west side of Indianapolis is, that is our drinking water right there. And how does it come from drinking water into our tap in a way that we can drink? And just kind of breaking that down in a really fun and educational way for people. So that was where we really wanted to branch out from beyond just solace.
Well, yeah. And also getting people to recognize that water coming into your house is a part of nature. You know, a lot of times we have that stuff, we have things come in and go out and we don't really make the connection. We don't connect the dots as to where it came from and what, you know, impact we have on it. And so that was another one of those series that we wanted to do, was just sort of like a connect the dots. And in looking at the series, as Braden was saying, is not just make it a doom and gloom, which I think sometimes we're all in this doom and gloom syndrome, you know, with all these reports that are coming out. But wanting to make it, you know, more educational and a little bit more of this fun side of here's what you can do and here's what's out there and here's how you can expand how you're getting involved in what you're doing. So yeah, we don't want to do that too, but definitely I think connecting the dots would be a good one, because I think a lot of people we think about nature on a daily basis. Like we think about what we eat. You know, I mean, we constantly have to think about what we're going to eat and that we need to drink water or have something to drink. And the truth of it is, we need nature on a daily basis like that all the time. And so that's really, you know, what I want people to kind of begin to get this aha moment is that, yeah, it's here all the time. And we need it for our food. We need it for our water. We need it for our own well-being. And we need it every day. And how do we get people to think about it in those terms?
One of the things that you both have alluded to, and I'm wondering, Leslie, maybe if you can dig into this a little bit more, is the idea that you're really hoping that this film will be a conversation starter, right? That you're hoping that it will kind of push folks into having conversations, whether that's with their family members or maybe folks outside their homes, that they might not have had. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about film as a conversation starter, how you see this film as an opportunity to start conversations, especially given that when I think about going to see a film in a theater, for example, mm-hmm. I'm usually not having a conversation with someone. So talk a little bit about kind of how you envision folks consuming Solace.
Yeah. So, well, really it's a film for sure. And we want people to watch it and to contemplate it, enjoy it. And then at the end, it just says at the end, join the conversation. And what we want people to do is start to think about, well, what were the people saying in this film? And how did the narrative at the beginning reflect how I had gone through the pandemic? And the people that are doing the interviews, what are they saying? What was important to them? What did they learn from being out in nature? And how might that impact you? And then talk to somebody about it, share it with somebody, share the film with somebody, and then say, you know, hey, let's talk about this together. How did you manage and maneuver the pandemic and keep your sanity and all that kind of thing? And was it being outdoors, and how much more time did you spend outdoors? Did you do any new activities that you didn't think about? So it doesn't all have to be this, you know, how do we save it? It's a full-on conversation about just how do we interact with nature. And so on the website, there's actually at the end, if you watch it, at the end, there's a link where you can get on, and we have a email address where you can actually really join the conversation and begin to talk to us about your thoughts about the film or your thoughts about nature or your thoughts about parks or, you know, views on how we can protect things. I mean, maybe Braden and I haven't brainstormed everything that there is to be able to do. Maybe somebody else has an idea that they can put on the page and people can get, you know, involved that way as well. So that's really where we want the conversation to be, is a bigger, broader thing. But the film is just to kind of help spur that.
I was going to say HBO. That's my goal. I want to take it to HBO, do some hybrid between Bill Nye, the Science Guy, and Anthony Bourdain. And I think, I mean, that would be best case scenario if we could get to that point. But yeah, really, the film festival circuit, we've discussed doing that. That could be a great conversation starter. That's how we could connect to the other folks. And we're super grateful to the Da Vinci Pursuit and you guys for hosting us on your website and creating a forum there so that people can just see what other people are commenting on, see what people are interested in. We really want to be creating content that people are looking for and that is valuable to people. And then we'd also love to hear about people's ideas for future episodes too.
That's, for people that are listening, you can go to the DaVinciPursuit.com's website and right away up front is the link to Solas. And then you can begin that conversation with both of them. And, that's what we're about is having these meaningful conversations. When I think about what you all are talking about with this, it occurs to me that one of the things that we forget that we've lost or we've moved away from is we've done everything we can, I think, as humans to not have nature be a part of us. Mm. And so when you think about it, we were afraid of many things. We were afraid of wild animals. We were afraid of obviously things that could kill us, other humans that could kill us. We were afraid of, would the weather be harsh? Could we survive that? Could we feed ourselves? We've almost moved, wouldn't you think, Leslie, to the level of where those big things still happen to us, like we get surprised with tornadoes or something else, but it's really out of sight, out of mind. And so nature is just not something that we think about being connected to our food or our water.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, there's a whole generation of kids that didn't get to spend time outside. That was my childhood, was spending time outside, just roaming around and playing in the dirt and, hiking around and looking at leaves and watching animals. And there's a whole generation of kids that haven't done that. And that's kind of what that nature deficit is. That deficit disorder is the not having any connection to nature. And so it's very important that we have it, and we need to get back to that for sure.
Yeah. And I think, it even cuts, you guys mentioned it, but, it's always been a concern of those of us in the science areas that in Indiana that we're thinking of, we did not only think of, but we passed legislation to be able to limit the ability to protect wetlands. And yet I wonder if it comes out of some of the same that those very legislators that were really adamant about that saw it as a hurdle to overcome because it's in agriculture, it was in farming areas, not as an asset.
Yeah, I would say that's actually happens a lot, that it's not looked at as an asset. And one of the reasons it's not is because it doesn't generate money on its own. Funding has to come somewhere else in order to protect it and take care of it. And so a lot of times it's not considered in that way. And we need to change our thinking on that because it's vital, it's important, and it is necessary. So, we need to think about different ways that we can fund those kinds of things and we can protect them in the legislature. But there are things like places, people who are actually getting involved, the Indiana Wildlife Federation, for example, they actually connect with our senators and our law people and to take them outside. They actually get them to go out on a hike and to show them these places and show them what's important about them in order to get them to understand why it's more important to protect it than it is to, look at it as an economic viable thing in that regard. So there are people who are in organizations who are out there doing that and trying to get people to see it in a different way.
I think that one of the things, I'll put my science communication professor hat on now, right? That one of the things that's really powerful about what you're talking about is that doesn't have to be a zero-sum game, right? That there can be a conversation where we can see our natural resources as an economic development driver in our state if we talk about it in that way, right? But instead we talk about saving it and preserving it instead of saying, this is something that will draw people to our state. This is why people want to come here, right? And so I think thinking about seeing, you know, the Hoosier National Forest as an example, as an economic development driver in and of itself, is one of the ways that we know we've seen folks from across the aisle really been able to, you know, be able to draw on legislation that supports, the kind of legislation that we want to take care of our natural world. I think about, you know, Broward County, Florida, you know, both Republican and Democrat mayors in Broward County got together to deal with beach erosion because they know that with no beaches, there are no tourists. And with no tourists, Broward County is in rough shape. And so when we think about, and it's one of the reasons why I love this film, I'll get off my soapbox here, but is that it really does draw us to have conversations about this topic, because we know that folks' minds are not just changed with data, as you've so well illustrated with this film. It's a great place to start, but what we really want is for folks to have conversations about, you know, where your water and your tap comes from. Because that's the place where, you know, we can deal with misconceptions and, have conversations that really get at values that we often share.
Yeah, and it changed. I think it takes a fundamental change. And I hate to put terms of capitalism kinds of ideas, but it does have to go there. And where it can go there is in ways of when we can start deciding what the costs of not having something is, not just in tourism, but if we remove a wetland, if we have a contaminated river, the costs down the road and even for us now are huge. We just don't measure them. I mean, we don't set out and measure the healthcare costs of something that's there. We don't measure the cost to a farmer or to a local municipality who has ever increasing water rates. Being able to monetize it is important, besides just preserving it. And I think, Leslie, you started with that, but I think back to what you were talking about with, there were people that were hunters and they were able to be out fishing. And they were really the very first conservationists. One of our strongest ones was one of our presidents who's out in the wild and realized that these might not be here and started the national park system. So, you know, I think it does come from people who realize it, what the asset that it is. Conversations are so much a part of everything, and that's what we do here at the Da Vinci Pursuit. And I'd like our listeners at home to have conversations about this film, to watch the film together, to have conversations, and then to engage in conversations with the filmmakers about this. And we'll be right back.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
Welcome back. We're having a conversation with Leslie Lawrence and Braden Worrell about how the global pandemic encouraged artists to develop new works of art, like this great film called Solace. One of the things that we are interested in, I think our listeners are interested in as well, is the pandemic created kind of a unique situation for this film, right? For so many artists, scientists, those of us, you know, all of us really working in new ways during the pandemic. So, Braden, maybe you can start off and talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you faced shooting a film like this during the pandemic.
Yeah, some of my favorite parts of this whole project were hanging out with Elaine and Leslie at a little drinking hole over a beer, discussing how do we really make this change, because we're really up against the clock with climate change and on all these key deadlines that we keep hearing about from the IPCC about we need to hit these goals by 2030, 2050. And that was pretty daunting. So if we need to rapidly transform our societies and our communities, in a big way, how do you get people involved? And money came up pretty quickly. And just, I hate to be so blunt, but a lot of the goodwill and the good feelings about protecting these green areas will only get you so far. How do you really get people involved? So Leslie and I and Elaine were talking about, like, oh, do we make like merch? Should we make merch to go along with this project and get t-shirts or something, get involved? Or we could do like little keychains, but then it's like, oh, those keychains are probably gonna end up in a landfill, and that's counterproductive to the whole goal of the project here. But really, you know, like Leslie was talking about earlier, getting involved with politics, and Crystal, like you were saying, in the example of Broward County, Florida, with the senior governmental officials saying, hey, we're going to lose dollars if we don't do something about this. We really need to get involved. So that's an angle that we've always considered and want to continue to explore as we continue to grow the project, is how do you really get bigger donors involved? Because if you're not really leveraging big money to get behind this, then these natural areas are going to continually be chipped away, and other corporations are going to try to just carve out their section and turn it into something that is making them money. So how do we see, as we were just talking about, how do we see these natural areas as an asset that wants to attract business and preserve these areas at the same time providing a good service?
How did you deal with the actual just physical challenge of having a film crew out there? Now, I know on each one of these, you didn't have like multiple actors interacting, but there is more than one person on a crew. And so how did you manage all of that during COVID?
Yeah.
It has mat suits on and masks and all of that kind of stuff. You know, we were careful, distanced and masked.
But, right. Yeah. And you were outdoors, which helps with some of it. But still, you know, I think about even making a film during COVID.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Especially when we're asking, in some cases with Shanae, our main character, we wanted to be in her actual home with her family. So we all made sure to like take a week before leading up to the shoot, where it's like, we all kind of agreed, hey, let's not go out. Let's not risk an exposure, because that'll delay the film. Like, and this was fairly early in the pandemic, so there was still a lot of unknowns, a lot of fear about this. So, but then ordering PPE was a challenge, because there was a shortage. You know, my wife was is a nurse, and she was having to reuse face masks at her own hospital. So to get booties and masks and gloves for all of us to wear during filming, that was a little bit of a challenge. And then fortunately, so we had just a few indoor scenes. We knocked that out quickly and safely. And then the rest of it was out at parks. So we're kind of conducting interviews. We're all standing about 6, 8, 10 feet away from each other. That made it more challenging, but making sure that we just, even the lav mic that we'd put on our talent to capture that audio, we'd make sure to sanitize that in between each takes and make sure that we're being careful to, you know, keep things digital for the most part, not handing paper scripts over, just because there was a lot of unknowns. It was kind of scary early on.
Yeah, Shanae was, you know, pretty serious too, which I get, since we were going in her home. She was wanted to make sure we had N95 masks, and I didn't have one, couldn't find one. Braden luckily, you know, had an extra that he could let me borrow, but she was very concerned, understandably, because we were going into her home and around her kids. So she wanted to be as cautious as possible. So there were those challenges, but it was much easier, of course, once we did get outside, because we were outside and able to distance. So, yeah.
Which is part of the point of the film, right? I mean,
Right.
In a pandemic, we went outside.
Yeah.
When we were planning and going through pre-production for this, I'd say 90% of our meetings were at a park, because you could sit at a covered area, and we could all like, okay, that table is yours over there, and this is mine over here. We could all just kind of, didn't have to quite resort to shouting, but we were all definitely keeping our space there and taking notes, and then kind of reconvening online afterwards. But it was great to just have some up close, more face-to-face interaction. But even still, it was following all the guidelines, trying to be as safe as possible.
Yeah, but it was fun. And it was nice that we were still able to do it, you know, even with its challenges as filmmakers, which we both love to tell stories. And that's really what this is it's storytelling. We wanted to be able to continue our craft. And luckily there was a place for us to be able to do that. You know, that the outdoors was there, and that's what we were wanting to convey. So, yeah.
Braden, what surprised you most in this process? You talked about some of the challenges you faced. You talked about kind of the very natural sort of genesis of coming up with this idea that you and Leslie worked on together. What surprised you most in the process?
For me, it was realizing how much of an uphill battle that we have ahead of us. I remember a couple years ago working with a couple local folks in Indianapolis about making a really strong concerted effort to make the White River a destination place, especially on the near west side of Indianapolis. And one of the project managers had put out a survey talking to people about, what would you like to see along the White River? And she reported a decent amount of survey respondents had responded back to something to the degree of, wait, we have a river? So just making people aware that these are natural, like they're right here in our backyards to begin with. And then, like we were talking earlier, yes, and you depend on these, whether you're aware of it or not, you depend on that river for your drinking water. You depend on those natural areas for your clean air. And that, just realizing how much of an uphill battle we have, especially I think as society, where we're getting very comfortable in our cozy little climate controlled spaces. We have blazing fast Wi-Fi, we've got all these devices. So for a lot of people, I think when the pandemic hit, they could just kind of stay at home and work from home. And they could, a lot of their life could be spent just right there inside it. That was perfectly okay. And I think we're still trending kind of that direction. I think we're only gonna see more of that. So to just regularly put out great content to show people having a good time out in the outdoors, and at the same time, giving someone who's watching that piece an opportunity to say, oh, I could get involved and do that. I could have a lot of fun doing that. There's value in it personally for me, instead of going away from your, binge watching on HBO. I mean, that's a great time. Don't get me wrong. I love to do that. But trying to get people, especially future generations, to really see that value that I think we've gotten away from as an overall culture. I think that was the biggest surprising aspect for me, but it really kind of redoubled my efforts and my passion about the project, because I think there's a lot of benefit in it for folks. So if we can kind of combine that quantitative data into a story, we'll be really, really good, in a good place. Because one of my favorite quotes that I've heard is that data will explain your work, but stories deliver the impact of your work. So that's kind of been my North Star throughout this project.
What I loved throughout that whole process of seeing the film and absorbing it myself was, it's not like most other films where it tries to make me feel guilty. It was a film that actually tried to make me feel hopeful. And I think it's interesting for you, we have a long way to go, but on the other hand, as a viewer of the film, it gave me a hope that there are people out there, and it was changing lives. Leslie, was that part of the intent?
Yeah, actually it was. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because it really was. We wanted people to feel like there was hope, because we're bombarded with all of these different reports and seeing now what our climate is actually doing, and the disasters that we're having and the fires that were occurring at the beginning of the pandemic and all of this stuff, that can depress people. It does depress people, and it gets them to a point where they feel like they have no control and they can't do anything at all. And we can do something, even if it's a small step, we can do something. And so we wanted it to be more of a positive impact, but also to say, you can do something, please do something. So it was. I'm glad to recognize that.
We want to thank our guests, Leslie Lawrence, who's the director and editor, and Braden Worrell, who's the producer and director of photography for a new film that really explores why it's important for us to be out in nature. And the film is called Solace, and it's available on the Da Vinci Pursuits website for you to see and then have a conversation about.
Until next time, I'm Krista Longton, reminding you to tune in again, where we explore more curiosities from the intersections of art and science.
You've been listening to Intersections, where art and science meet, with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversation that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others. Any of the ideas explored in today's show at www.thedaVinciPursuit.com.